We're going to proceed now with tonight's installment of Radio Free America number 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War. Now, we wound up last week after examining a number of Third Reich contingency plans to go underground. In a nutshell, both the Nazi Party and the Third Reich government, and the Nazi Party, you will recall from an earlier installment, was set up with a parallel structure to the German government. Each structure in the Nazi Party had corresponded to a structure in the German government. Provisions were made for both the government and the Nazi Party to go underground, to be organized along cellular lines, and to be decentralized to the maximum extent possible, to such an extent that the Nazi Party and the Third Reich government would, to an outside observer, appear to have disappeared completely. And also, we took a look at the plans to train young Germans to serve as future leaders of the underground Reich, both the party and the government, and plans to have them go abroad and go underground. We also took a look at the projected role of the Auslandorganisation. That was a Third Reich entity. Actually, it began before the Third Reich, in which people of German extraction in foreign countries were organized into an overseas body for espionage and agitation and sabotage by the Third Reich. And the last item in that we looked at in the plan for the Nazis to go underground was the projection by Kurt Ries, the author of the book The Nazis Go Underground from 1944, his projection that Madrid, or specifically Spain, would be a major center for the post-World War II Nazi underground. Of course, Spain was a fascist country under Francisco Franco, who came to power after overthrowing the legitimate government of Spain. His successful war to overthrow the loyalist government was liberally assisted by both Hitler and Mussolini, and the fascist Spain was projected by Kurt Ries in 1944 as a major center for the post-World War II Nazi underground. After that, we jumped ahead to a book from 1961, 17 years after Kurt Ries wrote his book, and we began looking at events that happened in 1953, almost a decade after Ries's book was published. We took a look at an attempted overthrow of the Adenauer government by a group of prominent Third Reich officials headed up by Dr. Werner Naumann, N-A-U-M-A-N-N. He had been the Secretary of State in the propaganda ministry of Josef Goebbels and had been named in Hitler's will to succeed Goebbels. The Naumann coup group and their plot was uncovered by the British occupation authorities, who brought it to light, and the Adenauer government was outraged over the British maneuvers. The German people supported the Adenauer government, and the chief source of their outrage was that a disclosure of this Nazi plotting might very well block the first concrete steps toward establishing a unified Europe, something which is proceeding ahead. Just last Sunday, September 20th, 1992, the French narrowly approved the Maastricht Treaty, which would establish formally a unified Europe with Germany, the dominant element, and a unified European currency with, of course, the very powerful Deutsche Mark as the cornerstone of that new European currency. We then took a look at how the Adenauer government lobbied to have the administration of justice for the Naumann coup plotters placed under German jurisdiction, and how the Naumann coup plotters were first released from prison and all charges against them dismissed. That will be the reasons behind that will become clearer this evening as we look at the incalculable influence of the Third Reich on the Adenauer government, as well as the influence of the Third Reich on the German, the quote, new unquote German judiciary. We then took a look at how the Naumann plotters represented, basically, they were in close touch with and were an organ of a Nazi party in exile in Madrid. And this was very well documented from contemporary sources, including, among others, the London and New York Times, the Washington Post, and a German paper such as the Frankfurter Rundschau and the Stuttgarter Nachrichten. This Nazi party in exile continued to function in Madrid with a very flexible post-World War II organization, which had successfully infiltrated all aspects of the German government using the very cellular organization that had been projected by Kurt Ries in 1944. We closed our discussion last week by taking a look at how this Nazi Party in exile in Madrid and its underground organization stretching around the world and wielding a profound influence in Germany proper, had basically been successful in thwarting the Allies' plans for denazification. I want to reiterate again before we launch into the texts for this evening that one of the major Third Reich stratagems from both the pre-World War II, World War II, and post-World War II periods was the use of anti-communism, fear of communism, as a vehicle for conquest. And as we take a look at the incalculably great influence of the Third Reich on the quote new unquote Germany, bear in mind that one of the main reasons why this information was better known by Germans than it is to the credit of what T.H. Tetten's referred to as the other Germany, a democratic, enlightened, and non-Nazi Germany, which he fully acknowledged the presence of but was despairing about the future of, it is to the credit of that other Germany that the events that I'm discussing this evening were brought to light to a greater extent in Germany than elsewhere. It became essential for the Cold War period to have the perpetuation of Third Reich institutions in the quote new unquote Germany suppressed from public view in the countries that aided Germany's post-war recovery, because it was essential from a propaganda standpoint to contrast the quote new unquote quote democratic unquote Germany with the totalitarian East Germany dominated by the Soviets. And again, never forget one of the cornerstones of this massive archive show, RFA 37, the use of anti-communism in a strategic sense by the Third Reich as a vehicle for conquest, because one of the institutions that they conquered using anti-communism was the United States of America. We're going to begin by reprising some of the information from last week's program by way of effecting a transition to new material. We're going to begin by taking a look at the book The New Germany and the Old Nazis. This book was authored by T.H. Tetens, T-E-T-E-N-S, published in hardcover by Random House and copyrighted in 1961. By way of reviewing Mr. Tetens' bona fides to be commenting and researching the material he is, I'm going to reiterate the biographical material from the back cover, or from the inside flap, I should say. T.H. Tetens, a leading expert on German geopolitics, was born in Berlin and worked during the 1920s in Germany as an economist and newspaper editor. For more than 30 years, he has studied the Pan-German movement, the Nazi Party, and the strategic theories of German geopolitics. When Hitler came to power, Mr. Tetens was put in a concentration camp. He escaped to Switzerland in 1934. There, in pamphlet and newspaper articles, he foretold the coming German assault on Europe. In 1938, Mr. Tetens came to the United States and began research on German problems for government agencies and private organizations. From 1946 to 1947, he served with the U.S. War Crimes Commission in Washington. Mr. Tetens is the director of the Library on Germanic and Related International Problems, and he's also the author of several books. We're going to begin by taking a look at the functioning of this Nazi party in exile in Madrid, Spain. Now recall that the existence of this organization first came to light in 1953 from major news sources relying on documents and wiretap material that were obtained by the British occupation government in Germany. Repeating some information about this Nazi party in exile, and bear in mind again that Kurt Rees had projected exactly such a development in his book The Nazis Go Underground, published in 1944. Enough facts are known about the center in Madrid to show that it functions as a Nazi party organization in exile. It has been reported that the Madrid center has its own financial department, sustained by a huge treasure chest which the Nazis shipped to neutral countries before the German collapse. There is a special department for German affairs, departments for Africa and Latin America, and also a unit known as the International of Nationalists. The latter is a propaganda organization with branches all over Europe and groups operating in the Western Hemisphere and on other continents. On May 29th, 1951, New York Times correspondent C.L. Sulzberger, S-U-L-Z-B-E-R-G-E-R, confirmed the existence of this group, which had revived the Fascist International in various countries, quote, from Malmo to Tangier and from Rome to Buenos Aires, unquote. The Washington Post of May 6, 1956, reported on close contacts between right-wing radicals in Germany and the center of the Nazi International in Madrid, quote, Observers in Bonn have traced the increasing activity of former Nazis who travel between Germany and the main centers of the International, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, Egypt, and Argentina. They often work for import-export firms and agencies and for German motor manufacturers. They are able to tap, quote, buried, unquote, Nazi assets abroad, which may be providing the main financial backing for nationalist activities inside Germany. The names most frequently in the news in connection with the underground work of the Madrid Nazi Center are the anti-Semitic, rabble-rousing Dr. Johann von Leers, the SS Colonel Otto Skorzeny, and the German Luftwaffe ace Hans Ulrich Rudel. Spellings, Leers is L-E-E-R-S, Skorzeny S-K-O-R-Z-E-N-Y, and Rudel, R-U-D-E-L. Continuing, it is a well-known fact that Franco has taken the Nazi plotters to his bosom. When in 1959 a delegation of the Nazi Condor Legion visited Madrid, Franco greeted his old Civil War allies with the words, quote, "Please regard Spain as your second fatherland," unquote. And again, bear in mind that one of the reasons why the material that I'm reviewing now and that I'm going to be going into will appear so shocking and incredible to many people who might echo the words of the American character in the German, in the radio play High Command from 1944, "Oh, that's Buck Rogers stuff," bear in mind the Hitler maxim that the bigger the lie, the more readily it will be believed, and also the comment of the Nazi character in High Command, played by Paul Lucas, that the more unpleasant the truth, the less likely it is to be believed by Americans. Continuing now, concerning the Nazi government in exile, recall now that Eugen Dollmann, D-O-L-L-M-A-N-N, was a former SS officer who was serving as a major courier for the Nazi International. He was arrested in Switzerland, then later arrested in Germany, and just like the Naumann coup plotters, Dollmann was basically given a wrist slap and turned loose. Dollmann received a 2-month sentence, and the Naumann coup plotters went completely scot-free. Of this, T.H. Tetten's comments: "The mild sentence given to Dollmann, the pressures to quash the prosecution against the Naumann plotters, the toleration of the activities of such important Nazis as Colonel Skorzeny and Hans Ulrich Rudel, give rise to the suspicion that high officials in Bonn had some secret ties with the Nazi center in Madrid." Well, they had ties not even so secret, and we're going to begin going into those ties right now. Skipping ahead to events going on in 1957, we're going to see how representatives of the Naumann group and this Nazi party in exile in Madrid were conferring with officials of the Adenauer government, and as T.H. Tetten's points out, it is impossible for this not to have occurred without the approval of Dr. Adenauer, so these dealings were not quite so secret. Preparations for the 1957 election were similar to those of 1953. After lengthy, confidential negotiations, an invitation was sent out in January of 1957, 9 months before the election, to a large group of top Nazi leaders for a secret meeting with one of Dr. Adenauer's closest advisors, the Bundestag's president, Dr. Eugen Gerstenmaier, G-E-R-S-T-E-N-M-A-I-E-R. Had not Der Spiegel gotten wind of this extraordinary exercise in, quote, togetherness, unquote, the outside world would not have heard a word about it. Der Spiegel of February 6, 1957, reported that the organizer, Karl Serf, C-E-R-F-F, a former SS officer, admitted that it was intended, quote, to keep the meeting secret, unquote, because these were, again quoting, confidential talks, which were not for the ears of the public and press, unquote. Among several dozen participants were former Gauleiters and deputy Gauleiters led by Dr. Werner Naumann. Again, interrupting, Dr. Werner Naumann was the leader, of course, of the Naumann coup attempt, a key official in Goebbels' propaganda ministry named in Hitler's will to succeed Goebbels, and an individual whose group was directly in touch with and operating on behalf of the Nazi Party in exile in Madrid. Beginning again, among several dozen participants were former Gauleiters and deputy Gauleiters led by Dr. Werner Naumann, SS Generals Paul Hauser and Sepp Dietrich, several leaders from the Hitler Youth and the Labor Front, and finally, and most important, top officials from the Nazi propaganda ministry such as Hans Schwarz von Berg, former editor of Der Angriff und das Reich, the former Goebbels assistant Helmut Sundermann, today one of the most aggressive neo-Nazi publicists, and Dr. Robert Ernst, once a Goebbels expert for the United Europe propaganda in France. Notice, again, Dr. Robert Ernst, once a Goebbels expert for the United Europe propaganda in France. Well, apparently that United Europe propaganda went down successfully in 1992. Some of the spellings of the various leaders here. Paul Hauser, H-A-U-S-S-E-R, Dietrich. By the way, Sepp Dietrich was one of the key generals in the Liebstandarte Adolf Hitler, Hitler's personal guard and one of the most elite of the SS units. Dietrich is his last name. Hans Schwarz von Berg. Hans Schwarz is H-A-N-S hyphen S-C-H-W-A-R-Z, V-A-N, capital B-E-R-K. Der Angriff is A-N-G-R-I-F-F. Helmut Sundermann's last name, S-U-E-N-D-E-R-M-A-N-N, and Dr. Robert Ernst is E-R-N-S-T. These are the officials led by Dr. Werner Naumann that were meeting with representatives of the Adenauer regime. Continuing with Tetten's text, the meeting dealt with reconciliation and the recognition of, quote, the good sides of the Nazi regime, unquote, as well as appropriate steps, quote, to end all defamation, unquote. There was a speech by Dr. Naumann in which he praised the Bundestag's president for his, quote, courage and understanding, unquote. Dr. Gerstenmaier, in turn, paid his compliments to Werner Naumann by stating, quote, it is regrettable that such a talented Secretary of State had the misfortune to serve under such a bad propaganda minister, unquote. To prove his good intentions, Dr. Gerstenmaier assured the illustrious assembly of former Nazi officials that, quote, a new Naumann case would be impossible. Unquote. Again, Gerstenmaier, G-E-R-S-T-E-N-M-A-I-E-R. Continuing. There was a lengthy discussion about the rehabilitation of the SS, which, according to Dr. Gerstenmaier, could only come about by using the necessary patience. Admonishing his listeners to moderation, Dr. Gerstenmaier pointed to an earlier statement that with, quote, due regard to foreign public opinion, unquote, it would not be wise to have SS officers of the rank of colonel, above the rank of colonel, excuse me, admitted into the new Bundeswehr. That last sentence again. Admonishing his listeners to moderation, Dr. Gerstenmaier pointed to an earlier statement that, quote, with, quote, due regard to foreign public opinion, unquote, it would not be wise to have SS officers above the rank of colonel admitted into the new Bundeswehr. In other words, colonels and down from the SS was okay at first, right off the bat. Continuing. There was little doubt among the observers in Bonn that Bundestag President Gerstenmaier would never have negotiated with the Naumann group unless he had the prior consent and backing of Dr. Adenauer. Well, I think that appears quite clear. I would also note that the Christian Democratic Union, the dominant political party in Germany, the party of Dr. Adenauer, achieved an overwhelming victory, even more in the 1957 elections than in 53, this despite the fact that his negotiations with the Naumann group had become a matter of public record due to the efforts of Der Spiegel. More about the reviewing again some of the information concerning the operations of this Nazi party in exile and how it operated in the quote new unquote Germany. And now the confiscated material here refers to documentation that was confiscated by the British occupation government and made public. The confiscated material disclosed that the Achenbach-Naumann group, Achenbach was Naumann's co-plotter and attorney, beginning again, the confiscated material disclosed that the Achenbach-Naumann group represented a so-called Führungsring, a Nazi high command, a kind of political mafia with headquarters in Madrid, which operated by remote control through clever organizational schemes on different levels, serving various purposes. This Gauleiter group met periodically in the strictest secrecy, mainly in Dusseldorf or Hamburg. Up to 30 former Nazi top officials assembled under false names as, quote, old friends, unquote, in hotels, where they carried on their political scheming. Among them were the ex-Gauleiters Kaufmann, Groe, Florian Wegener, Frauenfeld, and Scheel, a number of high officials from the propaganda ministry, some Ribbentrop diplomats, and top-ranking SS officers. Spellings Kaufmann, K-A-U-F-M-A-N-N, Groe, G-R-O-H-E, Florian, F-L-O-R-I-A-N, Wegener, W-E-G-E-N-E-R, Frauenfeld, F-R-A-U-E-N-F-E-L-D, and Scheel, S-C-H-E-E-L. Continuing. According to the British correspondent Alistair Horne, H-O-R-N-E, the, quote, roll calls of the ex-Gauleiters and high SS officials present read like a page from some nightmare who's who of the Third Reich, unquote. these Nazi leaders had either escaped the dragnet of the victorious Allies by false identification papers or had been released from internment after a year or two without any substantial penalty. The aim of the group was, quote, to form the general staff of the national opposition, unquote, and build, quote, a new political party out of the existing parties of the right, unquote. By the way, Fuhringsring is F-U-E-H-R-U-N-G-S-R-I-N-G. Continuing. Besides the infiltration of co-conspirators into positions of command within the existing parties and into government departments and party organizations on the middle and lower levels, another task of the Fuhringsring was to organize and direct mass organizations such as veterans and refugee associations, which one day could easily be used as instruments for political action. Other fields of activities for the group were political propaganda in foreign countries carried out in close contact with the Nazi headquarters in Madrid, and the initiation of conspiracies in foreign markets in behalf of German industrial cartels. Have the Nazi schemers, the Achenbachs, Naumanns and company, accomplished what they aimed for after the Nazi collapse? Have they regained influence and power in the Bonn Republic? The answer has been given in the affirmative by the plotters themselves. Long before they had captured numerous key positions in the Adenauer administration, in political parties, and in the Länder or state parliaments, L-A-E-N-D-E-R. They were exuberant about their successes in one of their secret directives circulated by the Nazi headquarters in Madrid. This lengthy document, issued in September of 1950, spoke contemptuously of the total failure of the Western occupation policy and pointed gleefully to the success of the, quote, flexible and smoothly working organization which at the end of the war provided the precondition for all the gains that by necessity emerged for Germany out of the chaos of the post-war period. 5 years after Potsdam, we can look back with pride at our accomplishments. Nothing happened by chance. Everything was carefully planned, unquote. And in a footnote, the Madrid circular letter gave a general analysis of the world situation 5 years after the German collapse and put special emphasis on the possibilities of a German comeback. Continuing with Tetten's main text, there is considerable material available which gives conclusive proof that the Nazis had made preparations long before their collapse to train an army of agents, often skillfully camouflaged as, quote, resistance fighters, unquote. About the successful continuation of the Nazi subversive activities, the Madrid circular letter had this to say. Even after the collapse, the National Socialist Party continued to work in a camouflaged way, getarnt, in dozens of seemingly innocuous societies and groups in order to keep the national outlook of the German people alive and undiluted. Just as many small brooks go toward making a mighty stream, the various nationalistic and radical groups in the Zonenreich carried out, almost without exception, worthwhile and powerful propaganda. Each of these groups had its special task and had to adjust its work to certain situations and circumstances. However, it was of chief importance to direct the underlying trend of the patriotic propaganda toward the same goal. The more diverse and disconnected these groups appeared on the surface, the less they were apt to arouse suspicion that they were directed and influenced by a central organization. We have placed our confidential agents, observers, and representatives for special assignments in all groups and parties, even among communist organizations and their fronts. The greater the number of organizations controlled and influenced by us, the more effective will be the results of our work. And again, note that the more diverse and disconnected these groups appeared on the surface, the less they were apt to arouse suspicion that they were directed and influenced by a central organization. Recall the plans as outlined by Kurt Ries, or delineated by Kurt Ries, for the coming Nazi underground to be decentralized, that coming from Konstantin Hirl, one of the officials who helped to plan the coming Nazi underground as the Reich was collapsing, or ostensibly collapsing would be a better word. And again, bear in mind, the Nazi concept of using anti-communism as a vehicle for conquest. Bear in mind, again, the Hitler principle that the bigger the lie, the more readily it will be believed. And bear in mind the observation of the Nazi character played by Paul Lucas in the radio play High Command from 1944, that the more unpleasant the truth, the more likely it is that Americans will not believe it. because what I'm going to be going into this week and next week is going to seem incredible to many people and distasteful to all but a tiny few, perhaps, in this audience. And again, I'm going into this information by way of taking a look at the German state of which the Galen Organization installed as the keystone of NATO's intelligence, NATO itself, as we looked at, having grown out of the Christian West concept, a Third Reich contingency plan for surviving military defeat that was being negotiated by German and American industrialists functioning in an intelligence capacity, or representatives, I should say, of that transatlantic financial and industrial axis functioning in an intelligence capacity, such as Alan Dulles and Guido von Gebernitz and Prince Max Eugen von Hohenlohe. That Christian West concept was adopted. It became the seed for NATO and the Galen Organization, which from the very beginning, even before the official surrender of the Third Reich, was planning to hook up with the Western powers as a means of regaining Germany's lost territories. And as we've seen, they were pretty effective almost a half century later. This information that I'm going into this week and next week is by way of taking a look at the state of which the Galen Organization was a projection into the United States. And again, the quote, new unquote Germany was not all that new. Once again, reiterating, so I'm not misunderstood on this score, these broadcasts are not in any way meant to be anti-German or a condemnation of any individual German or any group of Germans, but rather to point out that the institutions, political, legal, and military of the Third Reich were those of the Third Reich. And as we look at the Galen Organization as a Trojan horse in the United States, literally a vehicle for the defeat of the United States, not military, but political and consequently economic, it is necessary to understand the full nature of the state that the Galen Organization was a projection of. We're now going to take a look specifically at the Adenauer government and how this government basically represented the successful fulfillment of the Third Reich's plans to go underground, and we're going to take a look at the massive influence of this Führungsring, as it was dubbed, with the Adenauer government. In a chapter that T.H. Tettens calls The Hidden Enemy, Tettens begins his discussion saying, "Surveying the entire political structure of the Bonn Republic, one comes to the inescapable conclusion that the Nazis have had a quiet comeback almost everywhere. From the chancellery down through every cabinet office, through the parties, the parliaments of the Länder, the police, the school system, and the press, former Nazis are deeply entrenched in many key positions, as well as in the middle and lower ranks of the federal and state governments." Now recall that in a section of Radio Free America number 2, which I reprised 2 weeks ago, we took a look at how Konrad Adenauer himself, Der Alte, had, although not a member of the Nazi Party and officially a, quote, resistance fighter, unquote, recall the plans, as described by Tettens, to camouflage many of the key participants or projected participants of the post-World War II Nazi underground as resistance fighters. In fact, Adenauer, as the wartime mayor of Cologne, had collaborated very closely with the Third Reich, though not a member of the party. He was known in Cologne for his marvelous garden maintained for him by French slave laborers. You did not get French slave laborers unless you were a collaborator with the Third Reich regime. Recall also that the main power behind the throne, the Eminence Grise, or Grey Eminence, behind Dr. Adenauer was a fellow named Hans Globke, G-L-O-B-K-E, who was the co-author of the Law for the Protection of the German Blood. That was the law which provided the legal underpinning for all of the Third Reich's excesses, in particular the extermination of those they considered to be their racial enemies. Recall also that we took a look at the fact that it was Hans Globke who basically was in charge of running the Galen Organization. So we have this Galen Organization, again, the Nazi Eastern Front spy outfit that we brought into the United States at the end of World War II, that functioned as the CIA's Department of Russian and Eastern European Affairs, the NATO Intelligence Organization, and as the BND, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, the West German Intelligence Service, from 1955 on, while continuing to supply the U.S. and NATO with most of its intelligence. This functioning Third Reich military and intelligence entity, which functioned throughout the course of the Third Reich and throughout the course of the post-World War II period, this organization was directed by the German government official Hans Globke, the most powerful person behind Konrad Adenauer, seen by many as the power behind the throne, and the co-author of the Law for the Protection of the German Blood, the fellow who signed it, Wilhelm Frick, was executed at Nuremberg. Hans Globke enjoyed a much more pleasant fate. This was the fellow who was directing the Galen Organization, and bear in mind that the Galen Organization not only helped shape American political and military views by operating in conjunction with powerful forces, political, economic, and military in this country, ultimately first through the Crusade for Freedom and then through vehicles like the Republican Heritage Group's Council, actual Galen operatives or Galen-related operatives were projected into the American political mainstream where they became a significant force. We've looked at that in previous episodes. And again, liberation theory, originally a Third Reich political and psychological warfare technique, became first a major element of American national security strategy and later a dominant element in American political life, reaching its culmination, having its triumph with the assassination of John Kennedy and reaching its culmination under the Reagan and Bush administrations. We're going to take a look now. We're going to go into T.H. Tetten's text, and after discussing the relationship between Adenauer and Globke and Galen that we looked at from Radio Free America number 2 from May of 1984, we resume Tetten's discussion. He writes, Galen's spy network stretches from Korea to Cairo, from Siberia to Santiago de Chile. Quote, with the aid of his old and intimate friend, Secretary of State Globke, Reinhard Galen had access to Chancellor Adenauer at any time, unquote. When the Federal Republic became a sovereign state in 1955, the Bureau Galen was openly recognized as the official intelligence arm of the Bonn government. Thus, the worldwide Galen network came under the direct command and control of Dr. Hans Globke. There can be little doubt that with the conspiratorial capacity of the Bureau Galen, the Chancellor and his Secretary of State have at their disposal a formidable instrument for the internal and external struggle for power. We're now going to begin taking a look at the profound participation of Third Reich alumni in the Adenauer government at all levels, and we're going to begin by taking a look at something which has a very strong analog in this country, as we'll see in weeks to come, namely that one of the organizations of the German government under Globke's command was the Federal Press Department, in which the German government was able to channel millions upon millions of Deutsche Marks to influence the domestic press in Germany. We have functioned in a similar capacity here in the United States for many years. We're going to take a look at that in the concluding portions of the broadcast. Of the Federal Press Department under Dr. Globke, T.H. Tetten's writes as follows. Another organization operating under the direct control of Dr. Globke is the Federal Press Department, which in recent years has been involved in several scandals in connection with the use of its multi-million dollar, quote, reptile funds, unquote. Dr. Adenauer's Secretary of State has been charged in the Bundestag with, quote, paying journalists 1,000 and 2,000 marks for a political analysis, unquote. Such payments were obvious bribes given to newspaper men so that they would, quote, play along with the government line, unquote. Other millions have been spent to subsidize, quote, friendly, unquote, publishers. To these sums must be added secret funds for more than 40 million marks, which are earmarked for the discretionary use of the Chancellor and his Secretary of State outside of any parliamentary control. Last sentence again. To these sums must be added secret funds of more than 40 million marks, which are earmarked for the discretionary use of the Chancellor and his Secretary of State outside of any parliamentary control. Now, taking a look at some of the many key Nazi officials who became ministers in the first Adenauer government, Tetten's writes, the opposition has been arguing for years that a man with Dr. Globke's questionable record does not belong in such a high and sensitive position. Yet whenever criticism has arisen, Dr. Adenauer has gone to great lengths to protect and defend his chief assistant by declaring that he is, quote, indispensable, unquote. No less dark is the picture of another high official, Dr. Herbert Blankenhorn, who for many years acted as Dr. Adenauer's advisor on foreign affairs. Herbert Blankenhorn is Blankenhorn. Now, when I use the term Secretary of State, basically that could be thought of sort of the Department of the Interior here in the United States. These are not perfect analogies. Basically, the Globke was in charge of all internal German affairs and obviously had a significant influence on external policy as well through the Galen Organization. What we're talking about now is that Dr. Herbert Blankenhorn basically was serving as Dr. Adenauer's National Security Advisor or perhaps Secretary of State. And when we talk about the Foreign Office of the Third Reich, that was the equivalent of our State Department. And as we're going to see under Dr. Herbert Blankenhorn, himself a prominent Third Reich alumnus, the Nazi Foreign Office of Joachim von Ribbentrop was basically reinstituted. Key people from it were placed in critical positions in the Foreign Office of the, quote, new, unquote, Germany. Resuming again and repeating the last part of Tetten's text, no less dark is the picture of another high official, Dr. Herbert Blankenhorn, who for many years acted as Dr. Adenauer's advisor on foreign affairs. Like Globke, Dr. Blankenhorn had faithfully served Hitler in the Nazi hierarchy. When Dr. Adenauer was being groomed to become the first Chancellor of the Republic, he entrusted the ex-Nazi Blankenhorn with the task of organizing a new foreign office. Again, that's analogous to our Secretary, our State Department. Long before the 1945 collapse, the Nazi diplomats had made elaborate preparations for a quick comeback. Here we're going to look at their plan to go underground, as Rees was discussing in 44. Continuing, bear in mind, this book was published in 61, 17 years after the Kurt Rees book, and by an entirely different author. Speaking of the Foreign Office of the Third Reich and their plans to go underground, they organized a special Niederlage, N-I-E-D-E-R-L-A-G-E, or defeat section, whose task was to work out detailed plans of, quote, how to overcome the catastrophe, unquote. Again, going underground. That my interjection. Resuming Tetten's text, it is disturbing to examine the maneuvers of these diplomatic cavaliers as they evaded and wriggled free from automatic arrest and gradually disappeared into previously prepared emergency shelters in such guises as, quote, director of an orphanage, unquote, or harmless officials employed by an, quote, evangelical relief society, unquote. Most of these men had been actively involved in preparing Hitler's aggressive moves by spreading propaganda and lies among the future victims and by financing and directing, quote, fifth columns, unquote, and espionage networks abroad. In some countries, these diplomats gave all-out support to groups which organized rebellion against lawfully elected governments, as, for example, in Austria, Spain, Czechoslovakia, and Iraq. They were implicated in kidnappings, the plotting of murder, mass deportation and gassing of Jews, the killing of hostages, and the looting of whole countries. Only a few diplomats were ever investigated by the Allies in the Wilhelmstrasse trial in 1949. Wilhelmstrasse, Wilhelmstrasse. Continuing. Many others, although severely implicated, were never prosecuted. One of these men was Dr. Martin Luther, L-U-T-H-E-R, head of the Deutschland department, where mass murder, looting, and other crimes were hatched in an almost daily routine. Dr. Luther acted in close cooperation with the main security office of the SS, and his department was also, quote, the liaison office with the Ministry of the Interior, unquote, in which Dr. Hans Globke acted as the referent for Jewish affairs. Numerous documents show that diplomats such as Horst Wagner, Karl Klingenfuss, Franz Rangemacher, Werner von Grundherr, and others participated in the, quote, liquidation of the Jews, unquote. Klingenfuss is K-L-I-N-G-E-N-F-U-S-S, Rademacher, R-A-D-E-M-A-C-H-E-R. Oh, and Wagner, of course. Grundherr is G-R-U-N-D-H-E-R-R, Wagner, just like Richard Wagner, the composer. Continuing with Tetten's text. As early as 1949, the Neue Zeitung, the official American paper in Germany, warned of the preparations being made by the Ribbentrop clique to recapture the Foreign Office. The advice was not heeded by Dr. Adenauer. When the Chancellor in 1950 ordered the establishment of a new Foreign Office, Herbert Blankenhorn presented him with the nucleus of the discredited Ribbentrop group. The Chancellor must have known that Blankenhorn, Ribbentrop's close confidant, was himself implicated in the crime of deportation and mass murder. That last sentence again. The Chancellor must have known that Blankenhorn, Ribbentrop's close confidant, was himself implicated in the crime of deportation and mass murder. Recall from Kurt Reese's account of the Nazis going underground. Within the German government underground, there was to be an A man and a B man, the A man in contact with high government officials, the B man in contact with the underground Nazi party, the illegal organization. And we're seeing manifestations, as reported 17 years later, of the successful execution of that tactic. Resuming Tetten's text. On April 22, 1952, the Swiss newspaper Die Tat reported that in the trial against Rademacher, certain documents and a photograph which implicated Blankenhorn had not been introduced in court as evidence, although they were in the prosecutor's files. According to Die Tat, capital D-I-E, capital T-A-T, the picture, quote, showed Herr von Blankenhorn in his diplomatic uniform visiting the Warsaw ghetto together with other high Nazis, unquote. It was pointed out that the Bonn Foreign Office had put pressure on the court not to introduce the picture and the incriminating documents. The uninterrupted attacks by a few Democratic papers against the reactivation of the old Ribbentrop group were soon echoed by the Social Democratic opposition in the Bundestag. The fact that the old Nazis had infiltrated a department as sensitive as the Foreign Office became a constant source of embarrassment to Dr. Adenauer. Skipping ahead, or skipping down on the text, and resuming. In the Bundestag debate of October 23, 1952, Dr. Adenauer admitted that 66% of the diplomats in higher positions were former Nazis, but he added he could, quote, not build up a Foreign Office without relying on such skilled men, unquote. The recommendations made in the Bundestag report were completely ignored. The vital Department of Personnel is still dominated by former party members. For many years, its director of the Official Diplomatic School for Foreign Service was the ex-Nazi Dr. Peter Pfeiffer, P-F-E-I-F-F-E-R, a man closely connected with numerous conspiratorial affairs. At the end of the Tunisian campaign in 1943, Dr. Pfeiffer closed his last telegram with, quote, "Long live the Führer, Sieg Heil," unquote. In 1958, Foreign Minister von Brentano appointed two former Nazis as his top assistants. He made Dr. Albert Hilger von Scharpenberg, a son-in-law of Hjalmar Schacht, state secretary, assuming that the public had entirely forgotten a sensational kidnapping case in which this man had been involved 25 years before. Spellings, von Brentano, V-O-N-B-R-E-N-T-A-N-O. Dr. Albert Hilger von Scharpenberg is A-L-B-E-R-T hyphen H-I-L-G-E-R, V-O-N, capital S-C-H-E-R-P-E-N-B-E-R-G. Hjalmar Schacht, we've gone over before. Dr. Hjalmar Horace Greeley Schacht, the former finance minister of the Third Reich, H-J-A-L-M-A-R-S-C-H-A-C-H-T. In February of 1935, the Swiss authorities arrested the journalist Dr. Hans Wesemann and charged him with the kidnapping of Bertolt Jacob, the publisher of an anti-Nazi newsletter, who was then known as a particularly well-informed expert on German secret rearmament. Wesemann, W-E-S-E-M-A-N-N, playing the role of an anti-Nazi, had lured Jacob from France to Switzerland, offering him, quote, important information, unquote. Jacob is J-A-C-O-B. With the help of two Gestapo specialists, Jacob was doped and then brought over the German border in an automobile. Under mounting evidence, Wesemann finally broke down and admitted several kidnappings for the Gestapo. He named as his closest contact man in London the diplomat Hilger von Scherpenberg, today a state secretary in the Bonn Foreign Office. The other man elevated by Foreign Minister von Brentano is the ex-Nazi Dr. Herbert Dietmann, D-I-T-T-M-A-N-N, who has been severely implicated by the vast evidence regarding the mass deportation and liquidation of millions of Jews in the East. The Bundestag report sharply censored him for his constant lying as a witness and declared him no longer fit to be employed in the Foreign Service. In spite of this verdict, Dr. von Brentano appointed him Under Secretary of State. In 1960, Dr. Dietmann was appointed ambassador to Brazil. That, basically, the constitution of the Foreign Office of the, quote, new, unquote, Germany, the Foreign Office being the equivalent of our Department of State. Next, we're going to take a look at the Federal Press Department, and again, this is directly under Hans Globke. Attached to Globke's empire in the Chancellery is the Federal Press Department. since 1952, with a brief interruption in 1955, the press department has been headed by Felix von Eckhardt, who during the Nazi rule was one of the most successful scriptwriters on nationalist and Nazi topics in the state-controlled motion picture industry. Von Eckhardt, V-O-N, capital E-C-K-A-R-D-T. Continuing. A Bismarck film written by von Eckhardt was chosen by Dr. Goebbels as, quote, film of the nation, unquote, an equivalent of the American Oscar. Herr von Eckhardt's deputy in the press department is Dr. Werner Kruger, K-R-U-E-G-E-R, a former Nazi who once had been trained in Dr. Goebbels' propaganda ministry. Under Kruger's rule, dozens of former Nazis have taken up important positions in the press department. When Herr von Eckhardt served temporarily as Bonn's diplomatic observer at the UN in 1956, a Dr. Edmund Forschbach, F-O-R-S-C-H-B-A-C-H, also a former Nazi, acted as Dr. Adenauer's press chief. In other words, when von Eckhardt was on leave as the German diplomatic observer at the UN, Edmund Forschbach, also a former Nazi, takes his place. Continuing.